Wow, what a week. But we're not about to downshift now. Heck no. There is too much news breaking this morning. We'll cover the COVID relief package, weather, crop conditions, huge corn and soybean export sales, and we probably better talk about imports. Forced imports of very small quantities of seeds. Problem is, we don't even know what the seeds are.
Live from the full frontal forefront of Friday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Pam Johnson, and Sean Haney. And right after the news from Ag Day's Betsy Gibbon, Jennifer Scheit from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm not at work today, but here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
See, boy, I tell you what, there's the work ethic we're looking for. He's not even here, but we still get the intro from Davis. Love it. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. All right, welcome to AgriTalk, everyone. Glad that you could join us today. It's good to talk with you as we prepare for the free-for-all. And we've got Betsy Gibbon. Betsy Gibbon from Ag Day. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Chip?
Doing just fine. Just fine. Yeah. Here we go into the end of the week, and there's lots of news that we've got to discuss with Wiesmeyer, Johnson, and Haney on today's show. I got a feeling that Farm Journal News Director John Harith is going to be lurking out there somewhere, and he may even have to chime in with some perspective on some issues as we get going today. So lots to cover, lots to cover. How's things on the home farm out in South Dakota?
You know, I knew you would ask. So I called my dad before this and I said, Chip's going to want some details. How are things going? But it's dry. It's dry over in southeastern South Dakota. They really haven't had that much rain. But dad did come out to see me over the weekend. And he said, I did not see a bad field from when I left the farm going on 80 all the way to Indiana. I did not see bad field.
Wow.
So I'm like, great. they have a good crop still, even though it's dry.
Yeah. We know that there are some problems out there, but we also know that for the most part, we're putting together a heck of a good corn crop, and the potential for the bean crop is there. We'll talk about it more when we get Pam Johnson on here in just a little bit. All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Okay, well, even though this happened yesterday, I think we still need to talk about it. Everybody's talking about it, but today's the last day of trading, meaning anything can happen. So we'll see what kind of news breaks later, but corn still doesn't seem phased with China's large purchase of the crop yesterday. And of course, yesterday, China purchased a sale for the record books, USDA announcing a flash sale of 1.9 million metric tons. It marks the third largest flash sale on record and biggest purchase ever by China of U.S. corn. The sale, all new crop. That means China has now purchased over 5 million metric tons of new crop corn. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue putting on social media, quote, lots of potential to grow our ag sales to China. We expect big shipping season this fall, which, Chip, not out of line from what historically happens in the fall. But despite how the market reacts, China's reserves, its price, this really just has to be positive news. So here's Kevin McNew. He's an economist with FBN. Joe, play it.
In my mind, these are exceptionally positive deals. You know, I think the trade may be looking for or have some anxiety around the possible frictions with U.S. and China relations. So we want to see those deals actually lead to shipments. But, you know, I'm a little more optimistic. I think, you know, it's a positive development in a time when, you know, we need those kind of inputs to get the market moving higher.
Yeah. So, Chip, why don't you think the market's moving higher? Is it just weather? When you look at the drought monitor, it's pretty dry in the eastern and western corn belt.
Yeah, we talked about this quite a bit this week on the in the second hour of AgriTalk, and it's like the market has the attitude that we are adding more bushels by way of bigger yields than we are taking from the supply by way of these huge export sales. So it's one is offsetting the other right now, and as a result, you get this kind of go-nowhere market. Yeah.
Okay, I want to talk about another story that's been circulating this week, and it's these mystery seeds, which appear to be coming from China. I had the opportunity to interview someone who received a package of this of these seeds. His name is Dylan Salzer. He's not a farmer, lives over in Santa Rosa, California. He received the package a couple of days ago. I caught up with him on Zoom, and he had the seeds, and he had the package, and he was talking about it, and here's kind of what he had to say. So, Joe, roll his first clip, please.
Why do you think you received this package from China?
I can't begin to explain why. I mean, I moved out recently, so I was even surprised to that someone was able to get my address that fast and then be able to send it. But yeah, no, as far as I know, completely random, apart from whatever agenda a person has that sent it.
So yeah, that was kind of crazy. He was a fun interview, but he moved out just in February to this new address, and he was joking with me that he doesn't even have it memorized yet. So he was like, how did I even get this package? But his seeds were kind of the smaller type of seeds. He said in this package, there wasn't a note, no nothing, just his name and his address were obviously correct. He said there was a phone number on the package label. I'm not sure if that's common in different countries. And they said the phone number on there was incorrect. And I've talked with a couple of folks who've received these, and they said their phone number was incorrect too. And I asked him if he's done some online shopping or anything, or maybe his address got in some different hands. And he said basically he hasn't shopped any more than anybody else online. And so, yeah, he said my guess is as good as his. But of course, USDA's APHIS division encouraging anyone who received the packages of seeds to immediately contact their state plant regulatory official or APHIS state plant health director. So, yeah, interesting stuff.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, these seeds, it's I don't understand exactly how a brushing scam works, but that's what it's being called. So I have no idea what it's all about. I want to talk about it with Pam coming up here in just a little bit too.
I asked him about that.
I asked him about that.
I said, was there any note in there? Was there anything where you got to click on a website or URL? He said, nope, just seeds. That's it. I wouldn't even know where to go to rate something.
Wow. That is crazy. All right. Thanks, Betts. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. How you doing, Jennifer?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good. So maybe some financial help for county fairs. What's the story?
Well, yesterday, congressmen introduced the Agricultural Fairs Rescue Act to help preserve, you know, fairs across the country and offset the devastating losses that they've experienced this year due to COVID. And basically what it's saying is it would provide $500 million in grant funding for those fairs through their state departments of agriculture. And USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service would administer pushing that money out. And so, you know, when you think about how much money that the fairs bring into the economy, too, $4.67 billion, according to Marla Calico with the IAFE, I mean, you start to think about that impact on all those rural economies. And so we want to see those fairs continue to stay around. But I am concerned if they'll be able to keep going in some communities, especially even here in Illinois, the smaller county fairs are worried about the year ahead. So,
yeah, absolutely. And Jennifer, your point about how much economic activity it generates within those counties, that is so important. I think about in my county, Bremer County, Iowa, how important that fair is to the small town of Waverly, Iowa. Man, oh man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're missing out. We're missing out on it this year. There's no question. Jennifer, thanks. Talk to you later.
Yep. Take care.
You bet. We got the free-for-all coming up next.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit PivotBio.com to find a representative near you.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory, and we've got the free-for-all coming your way today. Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. How you doing, Jim?
Pretty good. Long week good. Again.
Yeah, it was a long week, and there was a lot happening in D.C. They were scrambling to get things done before they left town, right?
Yeah, but the scramble didn't work.
Right, right. We'll get into it here in just a bit. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing good. And this week, Jim and I had to call a draw on our four-game series between the Nationals and the Blue Jays.
That is unfortunate. That is unfortunate.
Yes. I don't know why they didn't keep playing through the weekend, Jim. Both teams now are idle because their opponents have COVID issues. What an odd baseball season.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it odd is exactly right, and the oddness may just slip right in to the football season the way things are going. Pam Johnson, Iowa Farmer, past president of NCGA and Mazal. How you doing, Pam?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Man, we got another beautiful day in Northeast Iowa, don't we?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. So lots of hay being made around here.
Yep. Yeah, that's for sure. Frustrating markets, Pam. We see these big sales rolling out to China, mostly to China, unknown destinations in there too, but mostly to China, and we can't get the market to go up. It's like I was talking about with Betsy. The market is trying to balance the bushels that are believed to being that the market believes are being added to the supply for the 2020-21 by way of bigger yields against the demand. And right now, like the Nats and the Jays, it's a draw. I don't know. Things are really looking pretty good, aren't they?
Yeah, the crop's looking good despite, you know, a lot of people are dry. We certainly could use a rain here, but the crop still looks good. But, you know, it is disheartening to get up and look at the markets every morning when you know those huge record-breaking sales have been made. But yeah. Then it's all about supply and demand and keeping them on a parallel track, right? And we've got a huge carryover coming up, and we've got a good crop coming up, and we just got to keep grinding away at getting building demand,
right?
Getting back in the world marketplace.
Right. Jim, I saw a tweet this morning from Karen Braun, who has been a guest on the second hour primarily of AgriTalk in the past. She's with Reuters. Says, USDA flashed nearly 11 million tons of U.S. grains and oilseed sales this month in 38 different sales. Corn hit 6.2 million metric tons, soybeans 4 million metric tons. China accounted for 78% of the tonnage, unknown 13%, and known others 8%. 78% of a really good month going to China. That's got to be encouraging.
It's encouraging, but, you know, in my talks with big traders and some industry analysts, they are so cynical, Chip, that they want to see shipments.
Yep.
Absolutely. Not the sales. Well, you got to have sales, but they want to see the shipments. So the denial is out there.
Oh,
one of the things that I heard this week that really kind of caught my eye was I was talking to Arlen Suderman from StoneX, and who you have on the show lots, Chip. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Arlen said is like he thinks we're underestimating the demand that's out there for U.S. corn to go to China. But one of the things that he's watching is he's fearful or aware he thinks there may be an issue where China is so concerned about COVID, they really believe the U.S. when we get to the fall will have so much COVID troubles that China won't be able to get product out of the country, and so there's a chance that there could be a lot of front loading going on of Chinese purchases right now. And he wasn't certain about it, but just something he said he was watching that really got my attention. This is actually some front load buying, and it may not be added on to the typical sales season in the fall. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I keep looking for evidence that this is real demand and not just restocking of reserves. And you know what? Even if it is restocking of reserves, I think I'm okay with that because they are moving so much product out of reserves, whether we're talking about the corn reserves, wheat, rice, pork, they're bringing those reserves. It's like they're taking the core out of the bin is what it feels like, and then they're refilling with U.S. corn. But the demand at those auctions, especially for the feed products, is crazy good, and they're paying record prices for corn. To me, moving more product at all-time high prices, Jim, that's kind of the definition of increased demand.
Yeah, it is solid demand. And if you go back to what Greg Dowd and others at USTR signaled, is China was going to fulfill their commitment on their TRQs. We didn't know for sure whether it would be totally U.S. corn in this case, but it looks like it will, Chip, and that amounts to about 7 million tons.
Yeah, you know, Pam, every time I see another sales announcement to China, I can kind of picture U.S. trade rep Lighthizer, who was on AgriTalk not that long ago, kind of sitting back in his chair and saying, see, I told you guys it was coming.
Yeah, I listened to Arlen this week, too. He was one of the speakers at the U.S. Grains Council summer meeting, and I agree with his concern. And, you know, the Chinese are worried that our ports won't be open or they won't be manned because we still haven't got – it seems like COVID's still driving everything, right? It's driving the economic recovery. It's driving what happens with ag trade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's dominating the our attention. I mean, there's no question about it. And then you've got BRICS saying, "Look out in the Midwest," right? She sees the virus moving up into states including Ohio, Kansas, Nebraska, Kentucky, Missouri, Tennessee, because of vacations and other reasons of travel. So she is putting the warning out that it's not a second wave. It's just a continuation of the first wave, and that it's going to continue to be a problem. You can't argue that at this point, I don't think. Can you, guys?
No, because anecdotally, our numbers just locally are going up. Personally, we know people, like I've said before.
Yep.
And I think it's just COVID fatigue. People are sick of it. And, you know, right now when we still need to keep being careful and do all the three things that we've been told, and yet I hear people say, everybody's going to get it anyway, and it's just like the cold and it's just like the flu, but it's not.
Right.
And until we all start realizing we got to take this short-term pain for the long-term gain here if we're going to turn our country around.
Right.
Well, and you look at how fast it spread through the Marlins organization, you know, and obviously tragically what happened to Herman Cain this week,
right?
You know, in his death due to COVID, it does sort of, it's hard to make sense of it, right? And it's, everything's in hindsight, and that's kind of frustrating when you watch the news at night. I really sympathize with a lot of lawmakers on both sides of the aisle and trying to come up with the right strategy on kids going back to school, trying to keep the economy not from falling on its face. It's a super, super legislative challenge right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're literally making it up as we go. And when you get into a situation like we're in, that's what you got to do. You just simply hope that you've got the right people in place making decisions that will ultimately turn out to be the right decisions. And that is a tough sell for a lot of people. And with some of the scary, I don't know if it's misinformation, news, fake news, made up stuff, whatever it is, you know, about testing. Somebody from a lab somewhere said, oh, I grabbed 10 swabs. I didn't touch anything with them, put them in the envelope, sent them in, and they all came back positive. Come on, really? Yeah, you know, the first thing you do is you say, there's no way that that happened. And then in the back of your mind, you think, what the heck? What if that's true? And I don't know what to believe anymore.
Social media is not my go-to for scientific advice.
No. No, can't be. Cannot be. But it gets you asking questions. And the more questions you ask, the fewer answers you get is what it feels like right now.
Well, I think some of the good stuff coming out is the research has shown the difference between younger kids under 10 and their ability to transmit it. And then the kids 10 and over are the same as adults as far as them getting it and passing it on. And so that will help legislatures figure out what the guidelines are for opening schools up.
Right, right. Yeah, very good. Okay, we're going to continue the conversation. We're going to move on to new topics here coming up next on the Free for All on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. How you doing this morning, Jeff?
Good, Chip. Good morning. How are you?
Doing just fine. Beans doing pretty good, too.
Yeah, we're getting a little rally. Yesterday's price action got things going. We went down to a new two-week low, found some buying interest, speculation that we'll see some more Chinese corn business surface over the next several weeks is offsetting the generally favorable growing conditions across the Midwest. Although there are concerns about some of this dryness that has developed from Nebraska to Ohio in spots, and so that's going to keep a little weather premium in here, especially going into a weekend and new forecast come next Monday.
Right. We've talked about it on the show already today. We've been talking about it in the afternoons, but it's a question of, are we adding as many bushels as we're taking away from this surge in new crop demand? And that seems like it's a battle that's going to take us right, or a tug of war that's going to take us right into next week. Nice trade happening in the livestock. What's happening there?
Basically, the story is we're starting to see some export demand surface in beef. We know that pork export sales have been record large throughout this year, and they probably should continue. Chinese pork prices inched up again this week. They definitely have a shortage of protein over there. And China now is the sixth largest buyer of beef for this year. Japan continues to lead. So maybe we've gotten prices down cheap enough now that we can see further improvement, especially with the dollar weakening against many of those importing countries' currencies.
Absolutely. Good stuff. You've got some great perspective on that in this week's Pro Farmer newsletter, Jeff. Thank you so much. That is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. I don't know what you're thinking! So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
All right. You can also tweet at us. Just include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I will be sure to see it. We've got the free-for-all going. Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer, Iowa farmer Pam Johnson, and we've got Sean Haney from Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. We've spent a lot of time talking about COVID spread and so on in the last segment. I want to pivot slightly here, and let's go to the COVID relief package that is being negotiated, still being negotiated, right, Jim?
Oh, yes. And there, it seems like the gulf is not narrowing, Chip, even though there's been four offers. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows just said this morning, and the Democrats have not yet responded, but they're continuing to talk. So I think it'll be a week or two before we see the end zone.
Okay. The change in attitude from the White House via Meadows on the unemployment benefits, Jim, does that move? Is that number one? Why was it rejected by Pelosi and Schumer?
I don't know. I mean, first they offered there's been four offers. One was an extension of the existing, $600 in additional benefits, into 2021. But the Democrats are moving the goalpost on that one, Chip. They want it through the first quarter of 2021. McConnell offered at least a one-week extension, and Pelosi said they didn't want a piecemeal. They're in the jawboning stage. So even though these funding expired as of the end of today, and actually before. There appears to be high stakes leverage from both sides.
This is going to be become very frustrating before we get to the end of this. I don't think there's any question about that. Pam, your take on the ag provisions that you've seen. The Senate is leaving giving USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue a high level of discretion on how the funds are going to be used. The House bill, and Jim, check me on this. The House is much more targeted on it. I talked with Senate Ag Committee Chairman Pat Roberts yesterday, and he seems willing to stick with allowing Secretary Perdue's office to figure out how those funds should be best spent.
Yeah,
For me or Pam?
Pam.
I think Senator Roberts is wrong on this one, because we've seen USDA's inability to come through in a number of cases. And just ask the ethanol industry. They can't count on potential anymore. They need prescriptive language, and that's in the House bill and not the Senate.
Okay. Pam?
Yeah, and I think it goes back to the whole position that Colin Peterson voiced early on, is there needs to be more input from policymakers on both House and Senate Ag Committees to figure this out. Certainly farmers are hurting, and another payment's going to get them keep them afloat, and you know, what are the estimates about farm income from government payments now? But that being said, there are also talks out there about, you know, in tough times like these, when we get ad hoc payments, they seem to roll over and influence what farm policy is going to be. And, you know, thinking just in one thing about the next farm bill, what is this going to look like? So it's a complex issue, and I'm glad there are a lot of smart people there trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I asked Roberts about would he like his committee to have more say over how that money is spent, and he basically said, listen, there's a proposal out there that once USDA comes up with the plan, that they give the House Ag Committee and Senate Ag Committee 2 weeks to look at it, have a conversation about it, approve the plan, and then move on. And Robert said that would be like trying to do a new farm bill in 2 weeks, because do you really think that the way things are right now, that the two committees could get together and come to an agreement in 2 weeks? I was like, oh my gosh. Okay, maybe we should just leave it with USDA. Otherwise, it could get tied up in committee for a long, long time.
But a lot of it is due, you know, some of that is also due to COVID and the lack of the ability to get together face-to-face to really hammer out serious issues.
Yeah,
but you can avoid a lot of silly mistakes, as CFAP did in the initial round, Chip, if you would advise the House and Senate Ag Committee of what you're going to announce. In other words, a lot of, you know, cover your what. But they refused to do that under CFAP. So, no, I think transparency and bring the House and Senate Ag Committee in. Give them a two-week deadline. If not, you're going to announce what you wanted anyway.
Okay. All right.
I think when it comes to the COVID relief, we're realizing that we're not out of the woods here, right? We had about a two-week period there a month ago where there were some good jobs numbers that came out, and boom, we're going to be back in the ball game in terms of a roaring economy. And you know, you look at its earnings season right now, and there's some real, real transparent revelations. We've got a complete separation of what is happening. Amazon reports maybe the best quarter of any company ever in the history of public companies. They hired 175,000 people last quarter alone. It's crazy. It's astonishing. But then you've got the other side of it, energy struggling, companies like Caterpillar struggling, Eggco second quarter net sales down 17.2% globally, clothing companies, restaurants. There's a real concern here as we move into August and some of this programming runs a little dry or gets a little light into September, that do companies do in terms of their hiring and trying to keep people employed? These COVID relief packages are probably more important than they have ever been heading into the fall.
And yeah. They call that the K pattern, Sean, where some do very well, others not very well.
Yeah, and tech is like, and that's when we look at the stock market in the morning and you see how much tech makes up of some of these indices, you're misled. You're like, oh, we're roaring. We're like flying high here. This is fantastic. Market's on its way up. But when you separate the industries, tech is roaring. And some of these others, these more traditional industrials, not so good.
Can you imagine where the second quarter GDP would have been without the trillions of dollars in aid?
Right.
Oh, no kidding.
Right. And the COVID quarter GDP off 32.9%. You look at, and I was looking for the numbers as we're speaking here. I just found them. German GDP contracted by 10.1. Italy sank by 12.4. France, 13.8. Spain, 18.5. The U.S., 32.9. Jim, explain that.
Well, one of them, I think that the European ones, I think that's quarter to quarter, Chip, and not on an annualized basis.
Oh, okay.
I'd have to go back and look.
Yes, it is. My bad.
That's what it sounds like to me. No, that's okay. But the U.S. on a quarter by quarter was what, 9.5% down?
That's right.
If I recall. I'm just going on memory now.
Yeah, yeah.
Still very concerning, that's right. Still very concerning.
Oh, yeah.
And unemployment numbers are still up and consumer spending is down. And like Sean says, you look at the sectors that are just being killed. And what was it? 40% of businesses won't recover or reopen. So we can't just keep our eye on the stock market to think we're out of the woods here and go about our happy daily business and ignore the effects of the pandemic on us and how we're going to turn the corner and how we're going to get our kids back to school. And what a mess, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, March 20th, let's go back to that. I was just coming off a week of vacation. I was with my wife. You guys were having the free-for-all, and I couldn't keep my mouth shut. I had to call in. And it was just as we were shutting down. And if you'll remember I pushed it right up to the last second and said, I'm scared of the imbalance that we are bringing into the economy. It's all there's no balance between watching out for the economy and trying to prevent the spread of this virus. And I think, you know, you cut a third of your economy out in year to year in one quarter. This is something that's going to take decades to recover from. We're Japan now. There, I said
yeah,
it.
But
we're Japan now.
But the situation that we're in right now, is that because you think that's because we didn't keep things open or that we should have been under lockdown longer?
No, we should. There should have been. And I'm looking back at it, and I don't have the clarity. I don't know how it could have been done differently to make sure that we maintained more of the economic activity that we are so desperately needing now. We need the balance. That's all I'm saying is we need the balance, and I don't know how to get it.
I don't think we got our baseline down far enough for long enough before people started opening up and traveling again and partying and going to bars. And, you know, that's just one piece of it. And also, we didn't have enough testing. I mean, if I know where the hot spots are in my county, if I would have access to that data, my behavior would be different.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Okay. Boy, there's lots of moving parts to this. I wish we had answers, but we're going to continue to look for them. We're going to continue to have the conversation. When we come back, guys, be thinking about what you want to bring right to the topic, because after what we've talked about so far, the final topic is give me some good news.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk.
What more do you need to know?
And welcome back to AgriTalk. We're into the final segment of the free-for-all. We've covered a lot of ground already. I want to get back to something that Betsy had in the news. Pam Johnson, Iowa farmer. These seeds that are showing up randomly, what do you make of it?
Well, you know, it could be funny, but it's not funny. You know how stringent we are when we come back from other countries, so we don't bring pests and disease or foot and mouth disease. And now people all over, farmers and others, are getting seeds from who knows where, thinks from China. And, you know, we get free stuff in the mail all the time, everybody, right? So you're curious. Your kid goes out and gets the mail, he opens it. Well, do I eat it or do I plant it? Is it a magic bean seed? So I think this has the potential to be really serious. I like it that we got on this right away and we're advising people to make sure that when they have a package like this, they call their state Department of Agriculture, and then people will come and help them dispose of them. Just keep them contained in their package.
Right. Right. Jim, I assume that something like this has happened before. I just don't recall it.
Oh, yes, it's happened. But you always got to worry about bioterrorism. Now, they've said they can't cite any bioterrorism on this one. It could be a brushing scam, and that's just a technique by a vendor that to bolster product ratings, chip, and boost visibility online. They chip an inexpensive product to receivers.
But there's no website on the package.
Yeah, and then they submit positive reviews. So let's hope it's just that. But still, it shows how something more negative can come into this country.
Absolutely.
It's happening here in Canada, too. CFIA put out a big warning. And one of their pieces of the warning, and I sort of scratched my head, was do not eat the seeds. Like, as if you open the package and the first thing you think is, yum, yum, somebody mailed me a snack. And the other part was do not plant them. And it's just, you sort of think to yourself, I would never plant them. But obviously some people would. Hopefully it's just a, and China now has asked for them to be mailed back.
Yeah, a real quick story here, Chip, on the scams that's going to proliferate in this great country. One of the more intelligent people I know, a very personal friend, last week got scammed, believe it or not, for $29,000 directly out of his checking account. And that's going to increase because of the around the world. It was someone from Thailand, by the way.
Oh, man.
Smart person.
Oh, no.
Smart person.
And China's hacking into our research on COVID vaccines.
Yeah. Yeah. Yo, did you guys hear that I volunteered Davis earlier this week to be first in line to have a Chinese manufactured COVID vaccine? What do you think?
Did you see my response? Down goes Davis.
Well, Sean, China is halting. You're working with Canada, aren't they now on the vaccine?
Yeah, there
I
was.
Saw that
yeah,
this
they
morning.
Are. Yeah. Yeah, they are. Yeah. So I don't know. I think on the
Let's
vaccine,
get there.
Like I've seen a few people, well, more than a few, a majority of people saying, you know, I don't know if I would take the vaccine. And like that's what when we get back to all this, like how we're social distancing, we're not, we got to get to the vaccine. If we get to the end of the road and get a vaccine and everybody doesn't take the vaccine, are we actually, what are we really accomplishing in the long run anyway? I don't get it.
Yep, exactly. Okay, Jim, in your notes early this morning in your update, you had something in there about the filibusters and maybe doing away with the filibuster if Democrats take the Senate in the election this fall. What are you talking about there?
That was a major news item that's not getting the coverage as much as it should, Chip. Bottom line, President Obama, in his eulogy to Representative Lewis. Brought up the suggestion that if the Democrats get control of the Senate, they should do away with the filibuster. And he even said in the past use of the filibuster was racist. Now, you can have pros and cons on the filibuster. But if you were to get rid of the filibuster, and that's the, 60 vote requirement, it would just take a majority, Chip. If the Democrats sweep it, White House, House, and Senate, you are going to see major policy changes that will make your head swim, that will make this year look pale in comparison. Yeah. That's how significant that item is.
Okay, good stuff. Good. Thanks for the heads up on that one. Let's get to it. Pam Johnson, give me some good news.
Before I do that, can I just comment and say my head's spinning from policy we've had since 2016. So that being said, my good news is that county fairs have gone on here despite COVID and creatively done by fair boards to have 4-H'ers and FFA kids bring their projects in, social distance, animals in, animals home the same day. But it really brought a sense of normalcy back to small town Iowa.
Yep, that is good news. More good news on that similar front is the Iowa Governor's Charity Steer Show is going to take place on August 15th. No, it's not going to be at the fairgrounds. It's going to be in a pavilion on the campus of Iowa State University. I'm going to be showing this year. Of course, Mike Nagg, who's going to be a guest on the show on Monday. We're going to start the trash talk on Monday is what that means about who's going to win this steer show. But, I'm going to be showing Reeve Wagner's steer. So I'm looking forward to doing that. He's out of Franklin County. Haney, good news.
We have a very, very large crop coming here in Western Canada on the spring wheat, but from a U.S. perspective, there's obviously a large corn crop coming, and China is placing orders. I think that is a big positive, and hopefully that continues into the fall.
Wiesmeyer, good news.
Rural America is finally going to get high-speed internet. It's going to take a little while, but now we have a private sector solution rather than a government. Amazon.com has 3,200 low-Earth orbit satellites that's going to provide high-speed, very fast internet to unserved and underserved areas. That includes rural America, Jeff.
SpaceX doing the same thing.
Yeah.
SpaceX.
Very cool.
Yes.
You guys, thank you so much for your time today. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next Friday.
Cheers.
All right, that's Pam Johnson, Sean Haney, and Jim Wiesmeyer, the regular lineup here on the free-for-all on AgriTalk. You got to come back this afternoon. We're going to be talking about Eastern Nebraska cash markets. We've got Luke Beckman with Central Valley Ag. And like I said, Monday morning, we got Machinery Pete and Secretary Mike Nagg from Iowa.